Breaking the Panel is made possible by you and other listeners just as awesome as you are. If you want to support the show and get a little something in return, just go to patreon.com/breakingthepanel, because we do appreciate the help.
My point is, there's everybody has
heard. Did you grow up wanting to be Zod?
Zod?
I can just see little Charles running around his neighborhood.
Kneel before Zod! Kneel before Zod!
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comic's life. We're breaking the panel.
And welcome to Breaking the Panel. I have the Rock Got a Podcasting, and Charles McFall. Along with me today is the person I wish would be more like Black Bolt, Chris Wisdom.
Come, Rock God, kneel before me.
Talky words thing.
And now the Galactus of my soul, Paul Klotz.
Ah, I like it.
You just come and eat up all my joy and leave me an empty husk of dead earth.
Yeah, pretty much.
You guys are married?
See, we can tell Chris voted. Never mind. I'm going to leave that out. We're going to move on. Anyway, instead of being a jackass, let's do fun stuff here. We got no emails this week, people. I love the emails, man. Hit us up, btp@giantsizeteamup.com. That's B as in breaking, T as in the, P as in panel, at giantsizeteamup.com. We'd love to hear from you. But in the meantime, we find cool, geeky stuff to talk about, and right now we're going to do that. Chris, you found this thing. I had not seen any reveals for Star Wars. Now, I'm still the filthy casual of every show that I'm on, pretty much. So I get my news from Breaking the Panel's Facebook page, which Chris finds and puts up there. Or, you know, I'll admit I go to Geek Versus Week and look at their pages on Facebook as well. But what is this news that you popped up on our page, Chris?
Well, it brand new, hot off the presses yesterday when I put it up. Star Wars, Lucasfilm had revealed the title for Episode 8, which comes out December 15th of this year. It's going to be called The Last Jedi. So...
Now, that's still the theorized title of it, right?
No, that's the title.
That's the official title. Yep. Now, on the page, I like what Chris Stokes says here. This is speculation on his part. But this, I love this phrasing. This reminds me of Paul Klotz. Important to remember that Jedi is the plural of Jedi. and then, of course, he talks about thinking that Luke and Rey are the last of the Jedi. Alternatively, it could be that Luke went to the dark side and, you know, Kylo Ren, all this other stuff. I like this. I love, actually, that was Lawrence. I can't say your last name, Lawrence. Mr. Lawrence on Facebook says, Luke was the last Jedi until he turned to the dark side. It's a story of his turning. It'll be revealed that Kylo was his apprentice, but as Sith tradition stands, tried to slaughter Luke and take his place. That's why Luke hid Rey to protect her and train her as a new Sith apprentice. Episode 9 will be the climax, where Snoke and Kylo fight Luke and Rey for Sith dominance. Then at the last moment, our Lord and Savior Imperious President Trump will come in with a chair. By God, and save us all. Strength and honor. The politics aside, that would actually be kind of a badass storyline.
No.
You did it wrong. And you did it wrong. You got to give him your best JR. You're like, oh, God! You got him. That's what he was looking for.
I did that. I did my best JR. My God!
I'll tell you. You know, the fan theories are hilarious. And I love all the ones that are just like, that just jump the shark and jump directly to, like, I love the idea of, you know, Luke and Rey battling for Sith supremacy. I'm just like, okay, that would be a turn that nobody would expect. I don't know. I would be really interested to see the effect that would have on the third film. Like, would anybody show up or not?
Yeah.
Because that's some real...
I would totally show up. Now, okay, I'm going to go ahead and say, I understand that with everything, when Lucas had his hands on it, right, whether you agree or disagree with some of the decisions that were made, look at the world he built. It is all about hope and life and beauty, and it's almost a chaos theory, right? Life finds a way. That even when they try to kill all the Jedi, the Force still makes another one type of deal.
The bad guys always win, Charles.
I know that.
I mean, it's not about hope.
No, it's not really. Actually, they don't. The good guys win every film, and then they have to go fight bad guys again.
Whoa. Every film?
Yeah, every film, buddy.
Every film?
What's all the hoopla about? I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
I'm missing something. Hold on.
Let's take a moment to educate you, my friend, because I love you. And I want you to be able to sit at the table, the adult table, and have an adult conversation with everyone.
Oh, Klotzy, you're so wonderful.
Do you not recall how at the end of the third film, all the Jedi except for Obi-Wan are dead? And,
yep. Obi-Wan's
and,
alive.
And the Empire rises to power, and Anakin becomes Darth Vader?
It's called a saga.
But that's right? The bad guys winning, Charles. That's the very definition of it.
Then it rolls right into A New Hope. And now here we got another Skywalker soap opera going on.
The end of the New Hope, A New Hope. Yes, there is, you know, there's a victory, but it's not, they haven't won the war. You know what I mean?
No.
And then we roll into
victories.
But then we roll into Empire Strikes Back, where they get their asses handed to them the entire film. Mm-hmm. Like, just pounded. I mean, it is a cultural landmark that the second film of the original trilogy ends on such a huge down note. Han is frozen in carbonite.
No, it's dung.
Han's frozen in carbonite. Everything's in shambles. It doesn't look good for our heroes. And then we slide into the third
movie. That's the second act, right? That's how it's supposed to go, so the heroes come back in the third act.
You literally just said that the heroes win at the end of every movie.
I'm sorry. I remember Boba Fett getting his ass kicked into the Sarlacc pit.
That's at the beginning of a movie, and it was the third film.
Well, I watch them all together. What do I care?
Oh, my God. Charles, you're going to have to check that.
This is a film about walking, right?
You're not going to bring your alternative facts into this, okay?
Okay, so there are, but here's the thing. There are memories, and then there are facts, right?
Right.
No. I'm not saying alternative facts. I'm saying overall, as I watch this thing, what I remember is a world of hope, a world of ability. The midichlorians was blah. But still, the whole idea that the Force is always around us. I mean, bringing it back to Rogue One, right? I don't want to botch it because I know you guys are going to call me out. But what is the phrase Danny Wynn says? What's the little prayer? I am with the Force and the Force is with me?
I am one with the Force.
One with the Force and the Force is with me.
Thank you.
That thing's only gotten repeated like literally everywhere on the internet.
Yeah, I'm a friend. Everybody repeats it, so whatever. Because, you know, I have to have my echo chamber on my Facebook page. Ask Chris Wisdom earlier. I was like, does muting you right now count as real life unfriending?
At this point, though, your echo chamber it only consists of Folgers commercials, and I don't understand how you have a quality of life. The best part of waking up can only be heard so many times in a 5-minute period.
What the folks at home don't realize is that Charles's Facebook, he is literally unfollowed posts from everybody. It's just his Rock God of podcasting posts over and over again. And he logs in and it's like, bliss.
You know, you make your world how you want it to be. Anyway, back to Star Wars. What I was saying is I feel like from childhood memories, from even watching it again with my family, overall, the tone is dark times come, bad guys can win for a while, but good guys rise up and come forth. And I think The Force Awakens followed that tone overall. And I do think that if we have Sith on Sith violence, that it will not match the George Lucas tone overall. Although I still think it'd be a fun movie to watch. That'd be one hell of a twist.
Well, and I think, and I mentioned on the Facebook page, but I saw Brad Meltzer had posted his own theory, which I really liked. Not to take away from Chris and company, but Brad Meltzer's theory was, everyone wants Rey to be a Skywalker, a Solo, or a Kenobi, but I say make her a Palpatine. Good trying not to be evil versus evil trying not to be good. Oh, sweet poetry.
Hmm.
because then you've got a Solo that's trying not to be good versus a Palpatine that's trying not to be bad. Love it.
I would like
that more than just some Sith on Sith.
My big, I say she's so, a hairless Wookiee.
So what?
I'm just throwing out random crap.
Yeah, you are talking smack right now.
Let me ask you, Klotz. So the call it the vision scene from The Force Awakens, where we kind of get glimpses of what happened with Luke and Kylo Ren and, you know, the dark planet, the dark space, whatever that dream was. What is your theory on the realities of those events and how it might play out?
I don't know. Like, I think they were playing up the angle that Kylo is obsessed with Vader. That's obvious. You know what I mean? And so I think that's probably an obsession that had that was kind of there before he started training with Luke. And then as he trained with Luke, he became more and more confident in his abilities and his connection with the Force. And, you know, I think he's obsessed with, you know, Vader. He just sees him as his hero figure. And he doesn't for whatever reason, he doesn't understand why Vader was such a sad story, you know. But my personal theory about this whole Last Jedi title, I think and this is what I'd like to see, but I don't know that they'll definitely go this way. But I think there's a possibility that they could be leaning towards Luke training with Rey. Obviously, I think we can expect that. Mm-hmm. But I think what we're talking about with The Last Jedi possibly is that Luke isn't going to want to continue the Jedi traditions, because I think Luke is going to have realized how flawed the Jedi were. Because as noble as they tried to be, they were arrogant and corrupt. You know what I mean? Like, that's ultimately what led to the fall of the Jedi Order, is that there were no checks on themselves. You know what I mean? The council was arrogant and, you know, had closed their eyes to a lot of things that were going on. And they, you know, they had these haughty attitudes about how to handle things. And, it, you know, that was one of the things that pushed Anakin to the dark side, is his frustration with their inability to do what needed to be done to solve problems. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, and you see the haughtiness in, I want to say episode one. Where young Obi-Wan, Ewan McGregor, and Anakin go to the blockade around Amidala's planet, and you basically are telling them this is how this needs to go. It's like, and that always struck me as like, wait a minute, I thought Jedi were, I guess because I watched as a kid, I had ideals, and of course I watched the original with the 4, 5, 6, you know, as a kid, and then later as a young adult saw the 1, 2, and 3. But when I saw that scene, I'm like, wait a minute. I thought the Jedi's were like the white knights of the universe. We're always here to guide and help. But that scene, that opening, well, very early in that movie scene, where they end up, we're here to kind of tell people how things are going to go, it struck me as odd. And I think that now that you say it the way you said it, I kind of see a bigger dichotomy of how we're supposed to see the unwritten lines of what happened with the Jedi Council and how they were almost ruling the universe themselves.
Well, first it was Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan, and I'm just going to let I'll just say it was.
Sorry, you're right. No, you're right. You're right.
But yeah, what you don't see is who sent them there. Like, again, that's not the Jedi's place. That was the Republic using them, not the Jedi going there on their own.
There's a whole bunch of allegory between, like, the Republic being, like, the UN and them using the Jedi as, like, the UN Peace Corps. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
Something breaks out and they send the Jedi to kind of, like, smooth things out. They're the first film, they're supposed to be diplomats, basically. You know what I mean? Like, the way Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan are supposed to be handling things.
Yeah, they're supposed to be like Jean-Luc Picard and William Riker. What the hell? Yeah.
Well, no, and that's what they intended to do. Like, that's the attitude that they took, you know, that they weren't there to meddle. They weren't there to engage in combat, necessarily. They were there to kind of help smooth things out and resolve the conflict. But obviously things took a turn. You know,
when the doors got locked and they got gassed. They did not initiate hostilities.
You don't start nothing, we'll beat nothing.
Exactly.
All I know is in Lego Star Wars, I was encouraged to trash that whole ship before they locked the doors. I'm just saying.
Gotta get them studs. Gotta get them studs.
Gotta get the studs, man.
It's like when you play a Legend of Zelda game. It's like, listen, if you don't want me to smash every pot on the way to the conversation with the big, the big person in this town,
yeah,
you put all the pots in the way.
And if you didn't want chickens kicked, you wouldn't put them in the game.
That's definitely where I have a hard time with LARPing. I don't LARP, but you know, understanding LARPing and even I've watched a few decent filmmakers take D&D and you make a real life scenario out of what they're playing on the table, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, my problem is, even with Botch, my problem was every 5 steps, is there something I can break to find out if there's jewels in it? Is there
right.
Can I well, smash this table, see if it makes money for me?
All right. Well, let me introduce you to the concept called murder hobos. And that's in tabletop.
Now we're entering the rated R portion of the show.
Well, it's a term used to describe that kind of behavior. Like the fact that many role-playing groups devolve into the players are smashing everything that can be smashed, prying jewels out of everything that can be pried out of. You know, oh, look, it's an NPC. Can I stab it?
Yeah.
Does it have anything? Does it have any cool loot? Like that is how people. Because especially
that actually happens.
Oh yeah, I mean, especially
in video games, it kind of is the way you do.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Is especially nowadays with the post video game generations, where that is what we've been taught. You know, like if you play any video games ever, it's check every corner that you can't see so well on the screen, smash every pot. You know what I mean? Like do everything, try to do everything, because there's always something cool hidden someplace. You know. And you get rewarded for that behavior. But in a tabletop RPG, it's generally supposed to be a little bit more story-driven. But people just, you know, roaming bands of murder hobos. You know, they kill everything.
Yeah,
and that's the other thing is, like, how many parties get presented with the dilemma between do you resolve the conflict in this story by, like, trying to be diplomatic and, like, try to resolve what's going on? Or you just go, oh, okay, well, we choose to side with you guys and we're going to go kill those guys.
Well, that depends on which finish I'm trying to get in the game. Have I already played the light side, or am I working on the dark side right now?
funny story. When I played Star Wars: The Old Republic, initially when it first came out, all my friends wanted to play light side, and I had no interest. I wanted to play Sith. So my light side Jedi Shadow chose the dark side choices for every single story option. So we'd be doing, like, you know, the dungeons and stuff like that together, like all the, you know, all the group-based stuff. And what would happen is in the dialogue options, whoever, you know, everybody chooses their option in the dialogue, and then it randomly rolls to determine which one it shows to the whole group. But everybody gets, you know, either dark side or light side points based on which one they chose. Sure. So it doesn't really negatively affect other people, except that people got real upset when we're playing the light side stuff and all of my dark side choices came up all the time. So like it'd be like a choice between, like, do we save the engineers on the ship that we're, like, fighting people in, or do we let them die and go do something else? And I'd be like, let them die. Yeah. And it would come up and people would get mad. Like, my friends would laugh at me and get annoyed a little bit. But, like, random people that I just ended up in groups with would be like, what the heck? Oh! And I'd be like, sorry, bro. I wanted to be a Sith. What can I say?
Be a troll. I got to tell you, this should be no shock to anybody. But I've done the – back when they came out and they were big, you could take the D&D test to see what class or whatever – not class, but what
Alignment.
Thank you. What alignment you are. I am naturally in life, man, chaotic neutral. There are times where I'm here to help you out, and there's times I like to watch the world burn. And I played, it came out best in that game. I played what you just said. I forget the stupid name of the game now. The Star Wars game. Knights of the Republic. Sorry, thank you. I just blanked on it. My brain lost it. I played it, and it was interesting because I just made choices not based on light or dark, just what do I feel like saying right now. And my character stayed in the middle the entire game. It never progressed to light or dark because I'm chaotic neutral, man. That's just how I play. It's how I live, and it's crazy. It was fun. I was like, I know, I'm good with that. I don't want to be, you know, and Chris, not to start a different argument, but I've never wanted to be the Superman. He was always the icon of good to me, right? Mm-hmm. And never quite fully wanted to be the Punisher because he just wanted to murder all the bad guys. I just saw good. I saw great. No, see, Batman kind of, I don't know.
Then you saw BVS and you're like, I can be Super Punisher.
My point is, there's the everybody has.
Did you grow up wanting to be Zod?
Zod.
I could just see little Charles running around his neighborhood. Kneel before Zod. Kneel before Zod.
You know what? Take a look at Cookie Monster. Take a real hard look at Cookie Monster. Tell me he just doesn't get it. He gets it, man. They'll be like, here's a cookie, but you can't eat it. And God bless him, every time he's going to eat that cookie.
Yeah.
You know, Cookie Monster, who he is.
Cookie.
I know, I never thought about it in this context, but thank you, Paul, for bringing up Murder Hobos. My mind immediately went to the scene in Three Amigos with the singing bush and the invisible swordsman. And Dusty Bottoms is a murder hobo. He didn't shoot by accident. He knew.
Yeah. All right. We have to move on because I have a little bit of a time crunch today. But there's this other one. Dude, are you pulling up another Hoopla article just to troll me? Is that what this is?
No.
Okay.
No. So the headline
reads, select DC monthly books to receive price increase in new digital access. Like, wait a minute. I know I missed that we covered Hoopla. Yeah. We've established that.
No. Okay. So remember a few months ago when DC Rebirth was coming out and the big news was they were going to lower the price on all their books to $2.99 an issue. And I was like, hells yes, thank you. You've got reasonably priced comics again. Hallelujah.
I
kind of
remember that, yeah.
So now this is DC going back and raising the price back up to $3.99 on select books. And the link will be in the show notes, so you'll see which links it are, or which books it's going to be. It's not going to be any of the books that are released twice a month. So the ones that are released twice a month are going to stay at that $2.99 price point. But here's the thing. At first I was upset. And then, you know, I took the time and I gathered the facts and read the articles. It's amazing how that works. Anyway, the books that they're going to raise the price point on to $3.99, they're also going to give you digital access. So you're basically getting a free download code for that book. So you pay
$4 per book.
Per book, but you'll get two books, essentially. You'll get it in two mediums.
Okay.
So
and you own it.
Yeah, and you own it, yeah. And I'll be okay with that.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, especially since DC still has yet to give us a DC Unlimited.
Yeah, I know. I ended up having to let go of Marvel Unlimited due to choices in life and whatnot. But I got to tell you, that system, it's a geek's dream. I mean, you don't get everything. And no, you don't own it unless you want to pay extra. I've never been an owner. I've always just wanted to read it, put it back. That's why I love libraries. And I don't understand why DC isn't following that model, because
I don't either.
And
you're right, you don't own it, but you don't own it till you stop paying for the subscription, because I mean nothing comes off, so it's not like Netflix. Once it's on Unlimited, it's on Unlimited. They haven't removed content. All they do is added content. Yep.
So literally each month when they add new content, it only increases in value for you.
Yes.
And I mean, even if they had said we're going to do new content twice a year, there's so much on there. You're going to get your money's worth, period. Mm-hmm. You know, well, I felt like I got my money's worth and I didn't use it. I used it sparingly. I read not nearly as much as I wanted to read. And I still feel like I got my money's worth.
They've done a really good job of archiving a lot of the more important stories on there. Like, you can't find literally every Marvel comic book that's ever been printed on the site, but you can find all the major storylines. Like, there's not a major storyline that I've tried to look at that isn't there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So like you might not be able to find like Speedball number one, but you probably can. You know what I mean? But like, you can find all the major stories, all the big, mm-hmm. you know, especially any of the big events that involve a lot of different titles. And that's not just recent stuff either. It goes back. I mean, they went so far, like they went back and put Wolverine's first appearance, you know, in Hulk on there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it looks horrible it's beautiful in a way for its time, but like it, by modern, you know, comics,
dot it's, printing and yeah.
Oh yeah. It's rough, but like, it's still really cool. You know what I mean? So it was cool, like, to be able to go see that stuff. And yeah, I mean, it's an amazing service, and they've done a really good job getting it off the ground and having a wide breadth of content on there from the beginning. Like, mm-hmm. it's and they only add more, you know what I mean? And any of the new stuff, because all the new stuff's done in a digital medium to begin with anyways, you know what I mean? Like, the layouts are all digital now.
Yeah.
Essentially, basically, comics are made like Photoshop now, you know what I mean? That's all, you know, the artists do the art, but it's all digitally manipulated when it needs to be and stuff. So now they just, like, they put all that stuff in when, you know, once they get to, you know, to that time period that they're loading up the stuff from X, you know, quarter or whatever. So yeah, it's crazy. And yeah, you know, here's my thought. DC's been kind of, you know, eating scraps for a while off of Marvel's success for the last like 10 years or so. Mm-hmm. So I suspect it's Marvel was able to get that off the ground because of how successful they've been, especially with the, you know, the MCU. It's drummed up so much support. I mean, there's so many people buying comic books just because of those movies, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I suspect that they were able to put the money behind getting their digital service off the ground like that. Where DC, I don't know that they have those resources. So
do have partnerships with Comixology and
right.
Somebody else.
I think
that maybe that legally has to expire first. Who knows?
Well, yeah, there might be some. Well, and that's the thing. Like, it's really ambitious to make a digital service like that. Like, you know, it was really cool that Marvel did it. It was a smart move. It put them in a great place. But there was potential for that to blow up in their face. You know what I mean? Like, it could have failed. So it's easy for us to look back and be like, oh, it's, you know, it's really dumb that DC doesn't have this. And I still think that. I think it's like Marvel's proven that the market's there. If you make it affordable like Marvel has, you can replicate that success. You don't have to have the exact same layout. Obviously, you'll get hit with like infringement stuff. But do something very similar to what they're doing, and you'll be in real good shape. But they gotta, you know, they gotta throw some money at it now. But I think it'll pay off in the end. And I ultimately think that, you know, digital services are gonna be for the comics industry as to what like iTunes was for the music industry. In a good way, though. Like, I don't see it necessarily having all the downfalls that iTunes and other digital distribution had for the music industry. You know, because that's a whole different topic we get into some other.
Oh, time. Yeah, that's a whole different show right there.
But, like, basically, it's the fact that it allows a medium to survive. You know what I mean? And I think it's going to transition to the digital page. And there might be a point where we start seeing strictly digital-only books that come out. You know what I mean? I think we already have.
Yeah, they've already done some of that.
Yeah, I think they've got a couple. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, because I think that's what allows the comics industry to transition forward, is to realize that there's going to be a point where people don't want to buy comics anymore in a physical medium. Because we're already seeing it where people don't want to buy movies. People don't want to buy books. Like, I mean, collectors like having that shelf, you know what I mean? With all their favorite mm-hmm. movies, all their favorite books, all that kind of stuff on it. But the reality is that, I mean, so much content comes out nowadays that it's impossible to keep up. And not everybody can devote an entire, like, you know, room to their house to being their personal library.
Or a wing at this point.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's the thing, is like, digital, you know, people are moving towards digital in a big way. And I especially think that's going to be an increasing trend. Also, with the way digital storage is just getting better and better. I mean, you can very cheaply get flash drives that'll hold thousands of comics. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You can download your comics and put them on your flash drive and take them with you on the plane or whatever, you know, that kind of stuff. So like there's tons and tons and tons of options. And yeah, that's the way, you know, the whole society is moving. So it's good that, you know, for a comic company to try to embrace that.
I agree. So you want to embrace some things? We talked about Stud Life, right? Well, it's time for that Loot Crate coming back up. We got the new one. Stud Life, gotta get those Legos. This February's theme is Build, which features, and I'm laughing because the picture, Chris, you picked for one of our episodes recently with the Power Rangers having the 3D like that, train, is how I'll describe that. But this month, I guess Loot Crate loved it too, because they picked Mighty Morphin Power Rangers as part of their Build theme. Batman, okay, Because listen to the rest of them. Lego Dimensions and Tetris. Okay, so Lego Dimensions, I'm wondering if maybe you'll get a booster pack, because that would be so boss to get a booster pack of Lego Dimensions in that box.
Oh, yeah.
But it could be a shirt. It could be anything, because they always have their monthly T-shirt and pen, of course. But Batman's one reason I say, okay, it's like, okay, I get Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. They came together to form the Ultra Zord or whatever it was called. I admit, I rarely watched that crap. It was beyond, well, it's not crap. I get people liked it, but it was beyond my time, you know, when it came out. So I don't know if it's called the, is it called a Mighty Zord or Ultra Zord or Zod or something?
Megazord, I believe.
Megazord, okay. But I understand the build there. Obviously, Lego Dimensions, I understand the build there. Tetris, that's a no-brainer. Can you guys help me figure out what Batman is for a build theme?
He takes a bunch of orphans and he builds his own family.
I'll take it. There you go. You get your own Batman orphan in this box. For as low as less than $20 a month, you too can have a Batman orphan come to your mailbox.
Loot Crate partnered with Sally Struthers this month.
So you've got to the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, to subscribe to get your Bruce Wayne orphan sent to you by Loot Crate. But come the 20th, it's over. No, you cannot get your Tim Drake or anybody else for that matter. Head over to lootcrate.com/giant-size-team-up and enter code giant-size-team-up to save some money and help a starving orphan today. I like your take, man. That was good. So we got Suicide Squad Oscar nomination. Are those supposed to be in the same damn sentence?
Oh, I knew this was going to come to turn.
Not in my world, but...
Okay, wait. To be fair...
I like the film, though. It's enjoyable.
No. It was nominated for Best Makeup and Hair.
Yes, exactly. And that's... Yes. I want to make sure that we all understand that. Listeners included.
Right. Like, it wasn't nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah. Best Screenplay. Well, best Direction.
Yeah, best Adaptation. Any of that stuff. Yeah. None of it. Yeah. No, certainly not Best Director.
Yeah.
No, it was nominated for Best Makeup and Hair. You know, I gotta say, I was looking at the Oscar noms this morning, and they are very interesting. And there's a whole boatload of movies that I've never heard of on there. But that's just, I don't know.
That's a standard, yeah.
Well, there's been a lot of really good stuff that came out in the last year that wasn't like your big blockbuster release, you know what I mean? And I think that's a thing we've talked about a little bit in the past, how like... You know, your Rogue Ones and your MCU movies, they really blot out the sun on any smaller films that aren't, you know, intended to be like huge, colossal blockbusters. But yeah, I'll tell you, La La Land got like a gazillion nominations. And so that's a movie I intend to watch because it got nominated in like almost every category. Best film, a whole bunch of other ones, like it crazy. There was a little bit of I'm actually super excited. I was talking about Arrival late last year and how much I love that film.
Yeah, I want to see. I still haven't seen it yet. I really do want to see it.
It got nominated for Best Picture, which is awesome, and Best Director.
But Amy didn't get hers, right?
Well, that's what I was ramping up to is that people are kind of talking about how Amy Adams didn't get nominated for anything, you know, like so that's kind of like what, because the big thing I saw on Reddit was people were like, why did Amy Adams not get a nomination? She was in two, you know, heavily lauded films this year, because she was in another Nocturnal Animals as well. Why was she not nominated, but then Meryl Streep was, for a performance that people just don't really consider exceptional? Like, not bad, but not like, it wasn't like, oh my god, like, you know, let's all stand and applaud. And then I've seen some comments to the effect of like, well, maybe they just want to hand her the statue just so they'll see what she says up on stage and everybody will pay attention to the Oscars again, because that's what happened at the Globes. But
Globes, yeah. Well, maybe because we've all heard of the Colbert bump, so maybe this is just a case of the BVS anchor. Congratulations on your two good movies. The stinker was really bad.
I mean, she was such a small part of the stinker, though, man. I mean, She was in what, like three scenes?
It wasn't a stinker. And if you watched Ultimate Edition, she was in like five scenes.
Charles, have you ever heard the phrase that you can polish a turd, but it's still a turd?
And
I've been working with you for a few years. I'm still trying to polish, sir.
And aren't Oscars awarded for the movie that was in the theater, not the one that came out on DVD?
See, you missed a joke. The joke was she was in three scenes. I said, no, the extended cut, she has five scenes. Oh, no,
we got the joke. It just wasn't funny.
I hate you. Cartman is my spirit animal, man. I guess sometimes. I'm going to have to bring Travis Jones back in just to help me out a little bit, I think.
Paul, to be fair, sometimes we are a little hard on Charles. We are less supportive than we should be. We are not kind creatures. We're less than human to the man. Charles, could you say that we're possibly inhuman toward you?
Well, before we tackle that, I want to talk about Klotz in a TV show, The Expanse, man. I've gotten through two episodes. I enjoy the crap out of it.
Right?
It's really good.
Right? The exciting part is, for anybody who's late to The Expanse like I was, the new season starts at the beginning of February. So, like, you've got a little more than a week here to be like, let me binge this relatively short show. And, yeah, dude, I'll tell you, you're two episodes in. You're in for a roller coaster ride, man. It gets all over. I knew I'd sell you on it too when I mentioned Tom Jane. Like, it's pretty much that's why you watched it, right?
No, actually, I watched it because I described The Magicians and talked about how it turned around my thought process about sci-fi, and then you came on with your trusted opinion of, oh, if you like that, this is going to be really well, and you sold me on it. Because honestly, Thomas Jane is cool, but I find the guy on the XO, the character that's forced to be the XO, I find him actually more compelling to watch right now.
Mm-hmm. My favorite character is the mechanic, Amos.
I don't think I've gotten to him yet.
No, he's there. He's the like, his hair is like buzzed real tight to his head, and he just...
Okay, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Oh, man. He's the heart and soul of that show. Like... He's the guy that does what needs to be done when it needs to be done, and he's the one that has all the best quips. So, you know, pay attention to him as things go forward, because you're just going to laugh. Because he's just like, oh, man, deadpan all the time. Just like, I did the thing, and it's really funny. Heart and soul of that show.
Cool.
I'm glad you're digging it, though, man. That's awesome.
And I got to say, this seems to be a style so far. These are the only two shows I've watched on sci-fi recently, Magicians and The Expanse. But I like the dark theme that's going with it. One, it is darker, is dealing with grittier things. But as in The Magicians, and I saw it in the first episode and second episode of The Expanse, is it ends with a big bad. Like, bam, this just happened. Boom, there goes the credits. And I like that. I like that. Oh, that just happened. What's next feeling? Honestly, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. could borrow from that a little bit. Just saying. So, but that being said, we are going to move on here. We've got some Inhuman stories, some stuff to talk about here in just a minute. But you know how this goes. Help us keep the comic books rolling, as you were. Listen to the ad. We'll be back in 30 seconds. It's just 30 seconds. You'll be okay. And we're back. And since we went on break, Chris has walked out. He's on some kind of protest because we didn't talk enough about what he wanted to talk about on the show.
I was just going to ask if it was good for you, since you said it was only going to be 30 seconds.
That's a better joke. I like
it. Like, that's a pretty interesting, like, 10 seconds of disappointment and then 20 seconds of awkward disappointment.
You know, we're going to go to a very bad place if we keep up. So, hey, what's up with the Inhumans? Now, here's an article that came across my virtual desktop today, looking for news stories. It says, the headline is very clickbaity. Vin Diesel takes Marvel to task for abandoning Inhumans. But the general gist is, I was unaware. I knew that when they signed Spider-Man, they had bumped Inhumans back on the production list as far as the movie production list goes. and now apparently is totally off the production schedule, which is honestly a huge disappointment to me. It does say that speculation is that characters have been relegated to the small screen. This article does not go on to say anybody's legitimately talking about a TV show yet. It's just saying that it's in the atmosphere, basically. No. There are no hard facts to saying it's going to go this way. But basically, Vin Diesel is, he loves the thought of the movie. He thinks they could do really good with it, so on and so forth. But here's the point I want to make. I believe we talked about this either on a very, very early Breaking the Panel or even back in the days of From the Helicarrier. And I said, ooh, Vin Diesel could be Black Bolt. And the geekery came out like, no, he can't. He's Groot. I'm like, no, shut up. Daddy's always right because I got this. In Groot, he's animated. You only hear his voice. As Black Bolt, you only see him because he doesn't speak. He could be both roles. And guess what? They actually had been talking to him about being Black Bolt at one point. I'm done. Y'all can talk about it now.
Well, where to begin? I mean, I hate to say that once again, we've already covered something on this show, but we did talk about the Inhumans TV show.
I just like to bring it up. No. I know we talked about it, but there's no facts here. They're not actually making an Inhumans show right now, right?
No, they're...
That's what I'm saying.
No, that's like heavy in development. Like they haven't cast it yet, but the plan was to release like the first, what was it? The first 2 to 4 episodes as like a movie. They're going to release it as a movie in theaters. And I believe they were filming portions of it in IMAX. And then that was going to lead into a series on television. So you were still going to get your big screen.
No, see, like with the Hoopla, I got that one. This one has zero connection to having that conversation.
Okay.
I don't remember. Klotz, you remember?
I'm going to stop talking. You never listen to me, Charles. Aaron, I feel you. I feel you, Aaron.
But no, Klotz, does that sound right?
What?
That we talked to... that we talked about them filming 4 episodes and putting it like in a theater type atmosphere and blah blah blah.
Yes, Charles, we discussed that.
Damn it. I got a lot on my plate, people. That's the thing. But this article still doesn't reference that at all. So technically speaking, I'm right.
Yes, you were right when you said it was clickbaity. You're correct.
Do you think, now Feige is quoted to say, I think Inhumans will happen for sure. I don't know when. I think it's happening on television. Is this Feige? Yeah, Feige. And I think we get phase four, as I've always said, it could happen as a movie. I think it'd be super cool. That was on the promotion for Doctor Strange. That's recent that he was quoted saying that. Mm-hmm. But they have a history. If they do the small screen, they won't do the big screen.
Typically. I honestly wonder if behind the scenes we're possibly not seeing more movement on something amicable between Fox and Marvel Disney. And because we've already talked about how you're getting ready. X-Men comics are coming back. We're going to get Cable, Jean Grey, Iceman getting their own titles. Blue and Yellow teams are coming back. Cable, did I say Cable? I said Cable. Mm-hmm. So we're already seeing the X-Men come back on the comic book side. So I wonder if there's not steps being made to say, okay, we're going to put the Inhumans on the back burner and we're going to see what we can do with a partnership with Fox and maybe do something with the X-Men. And this is all prepping the waters. I don't know that that's what's happening. I could see it easily being that. And I think after this summer's release of Spider-Man, we'll see, because we already saw the success that they can have with Civil War, but now we're going to see what the studio proper does with Spider-Man. And
I get that theory. I honestly don't think he would, but do you think Vin Diesel would do the small screen version of Black Bolt? Because I still think he'd be perfect for the role.
I agree, but I don't think that he would. I could be surprised and he would, but I don't think that he would. Unless they do that initial 4 episodes like a big movie, and it gets the IMAX release, and then he goes off, and then Black Bolt goes off into some space mission, and every once in a while, like maybe once a season, you'll get to see a 3-second appearance of Black Bolt.
Yeah,
on the television show.
I mean, Klotz, I could see them. I could see Vin Diesel taking this on if it was done in the style of like Netflix or even maybe a new partnership with somebody like HBO, where it's a bigger level. It's not just NBC TV, not to knock NBC, but there is a huge difference between NBC television, cable television, like HBO and those kind of things, and then even Netflix and Hulu, what they can do in the budgets they put in. Do you think if it went a different route other than Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. that Vin Diesel might do it?
Yeah.
Thank you for your contribution today, Klotz. You have been so helpful.
Sometimes I just like to watch you like dangle on the hook, and wither and dry out.
Well, let's talk about
that's chaotic, I mean, not so neutral.
he is truly picking the Sith side. Listen, of this conversation and every conversation to break into panel. It all makes sense now.
My alignment is chaotic me. Okay. I don't have strong feelings about this subject. I mean, we talked about it a little bit pre-show. It's obvious to me that Marvel needs to change how they want to handle what they put on in the television medium. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if this is a step in that direction, I'm fine with that. They certainly cannot bring any, they cannot continue to handle Inhumans the way they have on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And they can't.
Yeah, agreed.
They cannot continue to put stuff on air akin to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because it's just been rough. It's been not great. I mean, let's be real. There was the glimmer of hope, you know, like late second season, third season, things started to really look promising, and then they just destroyed it. They smashed it to bits, and they made it one of the most boring shows on TV.
Well, and again, I know we did talk about that, but that just reiterate, it was they were ramping up to felt like to build towards an Inhumans movie, then things shifted, and now they're stuck with this bag full.
But they were doing so badly. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, the thing was like the Kree that showed up in that one episode.
Yeah.
Oh my God!
Well, like, and that's what I was going to say. I have more issue with how they handled the Kree than how they handled the Inhumans.
Yeah.
Well, they made the Inhumans not. They just made them people who were wandering around.
Right, but they approached it from the way they sold it on the show was almost like that was a tribe of Inhumans versus because that wasn't the royal family. So they did they were very careful to separate the two so that they could have their cake and eat it too. But unfortunately, cake was not that good.
Right, that's my thing, though.
The cake is an alternative fact.
Yes.
Yeah. The thing is, if you want to sell in humans to the public, you have to do the royal family storyline. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to present them as being outside of just normal people, because that's the appeal, is that they're, you know what I mean? And so they botched that in a big way. And they were just doing it in such a lazy way. Like,
Well, but part of that too is it's not that they were just trying to present the Inhumans. They were trying to present the X-Men without having to have mutants. I mean, because this was during that time when they were trying to figure out how to replace mutants.
Yes.
And mutants are regular people that just happen to be different.
Right. Oh, that's very obvious, and that's the problem. You know, it's like you screwed the pooch there. So
yeah.
Yeah, no, I...
Multiple wrongs did not make a right.
Right. I want to see them do better. Is where I'm at. So,
Yeah, you know. I'm with you. And honestly, even with Daisy, I mean, that's like watching British sitcom and saying it equates to the politics of Britain and the royal family. It's like, no, I want to see, in this case, the actual royal family. They are the epitome of what Inhumans should be. They are a force to be reckoned with. What we're getting is new mutants.
The thing about, and that's the problem. Like, what is cool about Inhumans is that they are not human. Like, that they look like normal people on a basic level, but they are very different. Like, I mean, the thing about the Inhumans is that they are they're kind of like, you know how like most of the comic teams, especially in Marvel, there's always like a bestial person or whatever, you know what I mean? Like there's always one person who stands out. And X-Men, it's Beast. I can't remember all the names of all the other ones, but there's always like a someone who doesn't look like an like Thing is you know your Fantastic Four. What I'm talking about here, somebody who doesn't look like a normal person,
right?
And humans is like that, where it's like everybody goes through Terrigenesis, and you have no idea what you're going to get, and that's what's really exciting. And when I read the, you know, when I went back and read the original run from the 90s, one of the things that was really cool to me is that they had a whole societal structure based around like what your Terrigenesis gave, you know, what your powers ended up manifesting as and how useful you were to society, you know? So if you came out like a Black Bolt where you're obscenely powerful, you are suddenly really useful to that society, you know what I mean? And you're important and there's things, you know, you're in a different class. Now, I also like the idea that you can explore, you know, the class issues in that. But like, I didn't, and they kind of did it a little bit with Rena, you know what I mean? Like where like her powers are weird and she looks, you know, she was beautiful before and now she looks horrible and, you know, she's in pain. And so she had it go badly. You know what I mean? But like, you know what I mean? So it's just like, it's one of those things where like they didn't do justice to the source material. And they've, Marvel's been so good about doing justice to the source material up to this point. And it's just like,
they kill off every good character, or every good Inhuman that could come along. You know, any cool power, any cool. Hey, I know you haven't caught up, but never mind. I'm leave it for people.
Okay,
go back to when we first go into the Inhumans. The guy who I forget his name, but he was blonde, but he could transport anywhere, and they kill him. Mm-hmm. Right later on, but it's like that's what I'm talking about. They kill every good, cool. We kept Lincoln around. Let's mope around about Lincoln and maybe have a love interest.
Am I the only one who was stoked when he died? Like, am I?
Well, say what?
Am I the only one who was stoked when he died?
No, I was okay with it. I was like, oh, good. He's got the necklace and the jacket. See you, buddy.
In the moment, I was sad for Daisy, but like, I was glad he was off the show. Like, yeah. I was like,
not that he's a bad actor. It just was a bad role.
He wasn't necessarily a bad character until the storyline that they explored was ex-alcoholic, you know, medical boy who can control lightning, takes a turn, you know, turn for the worse and becomes depressed emo, you know, get away from me kid. And I'm just like, this is so angsty for no reason. Mm-hmm. Like, this doesn't fit the tone. Daisy is the angsty person. When she's, you know, to use the stupid phrase, manning up and getting stuff done, you know, in episode after episode, and Lincoln's just whining off in the corner, I was over it.
Yeah.
I was like, this is dumb. Like, she was supposed to be the edgy, angsty one. And their response to that is to make her more edgy and angsty again after he's dead. I'm like, how do you take all the worst traits of this one character, put them into another character that she falls in love with, and then put them right back into her afterwards? Like, what? Why are you doing this? I don't think there's anybody who's watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that is pulled in by that story, mm-mm, that is pulled in by that, you know, theme. I just don't think so. And it's like, why are you trying to sell something that appeals to like preteens and teenagers who aren't even watching this show? You know what I mean? Comic nerds are watching that show. The general public has abandoned that show a long time ago.
Yeah, I will say, I can't recommend it to anybody. But I watch every episode with my wife because I've got her, not hooked, but it's something we can watch. And we both, like we do here on the show, we pick apart the dumb parts. There are some really cool moments. There are some really good parts. Mm-hmm. There are parts that give you hope. Like, oh, are they going to take this and make it bigger? Are they going to do better with it? Every once in a while, they remind you, Agent Coulson has a holographic Captain America shield. I forget. And it's awesome when they bring that out. It's a great, great moment. But still, you know what? If it got canceled, I wouldn't cry. You know, I'd find something else to watch. If it got better, I would love that. So then I could come on the show and recommend, oh, it's better. Forget everything you've seen. Start watching now. And maybe we can get it to that. Maybe not we, but maybe the writers can get it to that point. Otherwise, being in this new darker, grittier time slot doesn't do a whole hell of a lot for it.
Yeah. I agree. I don't, there's no, yeah.
Just, yeah. That.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I gotcha. So.
So, going back full circle to earlier in the episode when we talked about Empire and down notes, I think is we will tackle this. Not to bring everybody down, because what we want to do is we want to make sure that we have enough strength to pass on to a good friend of the show and the network who's been guy that's been following you guys since from the Helicarrier days, Frank Allen. Followers of the Facebook page know that I posted a GoFundMe for his daughter. Penelope, she was diagnosed a few months ago with SMA1, which is spinal muscular atrophy, and unfortunately the prognosis is terminal. There's not a lot they can do other than make her comfortable, and the family has a lot of friends, has a lot of well-wishers, and that's I feel like somebody that's contributed to us in the past,
he's been part of what we've done from the Helicarrier on. He's been a great supporter of the show, a fan and a friend, and we definitely want to reach out and help. So we've definitely shared this on the Breaking the Panel page at See GoFundMe to help out any way we can. It is actually at the top of our page so that you can get to it easily so you can help out as well.
Right. And, you know, if basically, Frank and Frank's family are part of the GSTU family.
Yeah.
You know, Frank's involvement with FTH actually predates mine. He was around helping Charles out with some stuff before that. So, you know, we're going to link to the GoFundMe. It's on the page. It's going to be in the show notes for this show. Even if that's not your thing, if you can just send some positive thoughts and love in their direction, you know, for what that is worth, I think it means a lot to him and his family. And that's what we're doing is we just want to, you know, Frank, when you hear this, you know, we love you.
Yeah.
And,
absolutely.
You know, we're with you, you know, and as much as we can be. So, you know, it's just, you know, we were talking about this a little bit before the show. You know, one of the amazing things about what has come out of FTH, even though that show is sunsetted, is the amazing community that was, you know, based out of it, the people that came together, and, you know, we've just met some incredible people, incredibly supportive people, and so when we see something like this, it's in our hearts and minds, and it means something to us, you know. So anybody out there who knows Frank or whatever, send some love his way, and yeah, you know, check out the GoFundMe and consider helping them out, because they've got a lot to deal with, you know.
Yeah, I mean, in the South, when something like this happens, and obviously he's in Australia, we can't quite ship food, but we do food, because when you're having to deal with medical trips and just the weight of having to take care of your newborn who has got this kind of disease that needs doctor treatments all the time, the last thing you want to think about is, what are we going to eat tonight? And mm-hmm. as a community, we usually come together on something like this. This is a way you can come together and help out. Because every little bit that you can do, that you can help out with, means the world. It helps with bills. It helps keep things going. I mean, can you imagine yourself having your child go through anything and you have to go to work today?
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Join us, sending love their way, and we're with you, Frank.
Absolutely.
Keep your head up.
So you know what? Check the show notes for where to find us. Usually we promote where you can find us. The only thing I want to say is, if you want the link, it's easily found at facebook.com/breakingthepanel. We've got it pinned right to the top. Other than that, you know how to reach us, you know how to find us, and again, go out and support the ones you love. So we'll see you next week with more awesome geekery and good stuff.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizeteamup.com.